It's a galactic headline story. On a rare living planet, one invasive species seems to be killing off the others, even changing the sea and the sky. Who is covering it? Stephen Leahy, that's who. One of the few, Stephen Leahy, has been an independent environmental journalist for the past 15 years. Stephen, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex. It's great to be here.
Well, once upon a time, Canada's biggest newspaper monopoly had one or two environmental reporters. They seem to have been let go, no doubt because they caused trouble for lucrative advertisers. You're one of the few green journalists left. Has it been tough?
Yeah, it's been very tough over the last few years in particular. As a result, I usually write for international publications, not for Canadian ones.
Well, that'd be like Independent Press Service is one of the ways you get your stories out?
That's right.
Well, it seems pretty strange to me. Like, every week there's a big environmental story. A scientist outlines proof that the trees are dying, or we discover about, you know, the end of the food fisheries. And then I find a five-line story in the back pages or nothing at all about it. Why aren't these stories hitting the front pages and the national TV news day after day?
That's a good question. I myself, of course, am very frustrated by the lack of coverage. Important environmental events and the latest science. I'm afraid that our media is more interested in focusing on politics, entertainment, and sports, and of course business, than it is on the realities of environmental degradation.
Really, we see two sections, or I do, on the you know, all about automobiles and the latest great big vehicles to buy, two whole sections devoted to that, and there is no environmental section.
No, exactly. It's very rare to see substantial environmental coverage by any paper. And in North America, the British do a little better job, and the Germans also do a very good job of providing science coverage and environmental coverage.
And we presume their publics are better informed.
I think they are.
Well, let's get to some of the news you've been covering lately. Where should we start?
Well, I've just finished writing a story about the impacts of ocean acidification. Now, that's where putting CO2 into the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels is slowly but inevitably turning the oceans more acidic. The oceans absorb about one-third of the CO2, the carbon dioxide, we've pumped into the atmosphere already, and they're 30% more acidic. So what does that mean? That means that it's changing the conditions under which marine species can live. Already, there's been evidence that shows that some important plankton species have shells that are much thinner than they used to be in the past. And some of these plankton species are an important part of what's called a carbon transport system in the ocean. So they are part of the way in which the oceans absorb carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. So if that carbon transport system fails, there's going to be a lot more CO2 in the atmosphere, and we're going to be into catastrophic climate change very quickly.
Plus, we'll lose some of the basis of the food chain in the ocean, like zooplankton, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. These planktonic species, as well as all the other shell-forming species that are having trouble forming their shells because the oceans are more acidic, are key parts of the marine food chain. The implications for fisheries are enormous, and for other important habitat like corals. Corals also have to form shells, and the evidence is pointing to a complete absence of corals within 50 years.
What a tremendous loss for everything, the fisheries and all of that. Well, I want to move up back to land here. You've also covered the recent protest in Washington, D.C. about a coal plant, and one of NASA's top scientists, James Hansen, might have even put himself in a position of arrest there. That's so unusual. What's happening?
Scientists like James Hansen are becoming extremely worried that humans are not going to take the actions needed to reduce our emissions in time. They feel the urgency, and they are becoming desperate for action on the policy level. The scientists are prepared to put their own careers and even spend some time in jail to get the point across that we are in a crisis situation and we'd better start acting as if we are in a crisis situation.
Well, they can't really just sit back as observers as the world goes to hell. I mean, I'm glad to see this new scientific activism.
Yeah, I am as well. Many scientists have told me off the record for a number of years that things are far worse than they dared say in public or on the record. Now, just recently, I was at the AAAS meeting in Chicago. Now, the AAAS is the American Academy for the Advancement of Science. It's the largest scientific meeting in the world. And their plenary speaker was Al Gore. And Al Gore, who has, of course, learned all of his climate science from these scientists who were in attendance, his message to them was, you need to become active. Scientists around the world must become active in policy in order for us to take the kinds of actions we need to prevent catastrophic climate change. And if I may complete this thought, Alex, 1,500 gray-haired eminent scientists stood up and applauded loudly. That would not have happened 5 years ago.
Right. There's been a change in the perception of their role, and some activist scientists have headed over to Copenhagen just this week, I believe, in order to try and bring that message out even more.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an extremely important science meeting. I myself tried to get to that meeting, but I could not find any media outlet that would cover my travel expenses. I was even looking for donations at one point, because it is the most important science meeting this year and probably for the last 5 years. It is the most current information we have about the impacts of climate change, and some of the things that are coming out of this particular meeting, although it's not very well covered here in North America, I've noticed so far, are frankly terrifying.
And meanwhile, you know, when it comes to climate, people around here are saying, well, geez, it's been a cold winter this year. What happened to global warming? I've just heard a top British scientist tell the BBC on that question that most of the heat is going into the oceans. Now, if that's true, it'll take thousands of years, even hundreds of thousands of years, for that heat to be released, changing the climate. Have you heard much about ocean heating?
I've heard a little bit about it. It's certainly ocean heating is, you know, the oceans absorb energy from the sun, and it's a slow, gradual process. The oceans are already a little bit warmer, and they will continue to warm for quite a while. The impacts on the climate, of course, are also significant, because if the ocean changes its temperature, then it starts to behave differently, and that affects the overall climate.
Well, the currents start to change, and that could be a big fright for a lot of us. And you've covered, too, I don't want to say the demise of the food fisheries, but certainly big trouble for the food fisheries. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Well, the fisheries have been overfished for decades. Virtually every fishery on the face of the planet has been overfished. And that, you know, has been unsustainable for some decades now. But we're now adding in the impacts of climate change from acidification, so the food that fish feed on, the smaller creatures like plankton, are starting to be impacted. We're having warmer oceans and changing currents. All of these are having a major impact on fisheries. In fact, another large impact on oceans is pollution. The dead zones, such as in the Gulf of Mexico, have become larger, and there are more of them all around the world. And these dead zones are usually the result of nutrient runoff from our agricultural operations.
And we get these macro pictures of the oceans or the climate, but it also crystallizes down into individual species. And another of your stories that really caught my eye was about problems with salamanders.
Yes. Salamanders are kind of the hidden forest dwellers that very few people actually see, except for perhaps small children. Salamanders actually are a key part of any forest ecosystem, and some new studies are showing that salamanders in Central America are disappearing at an alarming rate. Many of them have gone extinct in just the last 20 years, and scientists are puzzled as to the reasons why. The suspected causes are a particular type of fungus and climate change. The conditions in Central America, like everywhere else, are changing. The climate is warmer than it used to be. Salamanders, like a lot of other species, are quite sensitive, especially in the tropical regions. They're quite sensitive to temperature changes. For after all, they evolved at a time when the temperatures in the tropics haven't changed hardly at all in tens of thousands of years. And now all of a sudden it's 2 degrees, 3 degrees warmer, and some of them just can't cope.
Just like the frogs in a way. We're talking with one of the few independent environmental journalists on the planet, Stephen Leahy. At your site, stephenleahy.net, you have a few e-books to help people out. Could you tell us about a couple of those?
Yeah, those are sort of my experimental attempts to compile some of the stories and add to some of the stories. I've got one book on the Alberta tar sands, and I have another one on hurricanes and climate change. These are very short, easy-to-read, 20-page kind of PDF files that people can download and get a quick overview of these particular subject areas.
And they're around $3 a piece at lulu.com, so that seems like quite a bargain for the information you've packed into them.
Well, I want to make the information accessible to people.
In the last Canadian election, you ran for the Green Party in a riding east of Toronto, which the voters included some General Motors workers. Why did you decide to try politics?
The reason I decided to run for office was that I was finding that many people here in my local community didn't know very much about the kinds of things that I have written about, because many of my stories are not picked up in any Canadian media. The second reason was I thought it was time for me to get involved in policy making. We need policies that are going to reduce our emissions. And I thought that maybe by running for office, I could bring these issues to the fore. And the Green Party in particular is a party that is committed to trying to halt the environmental mess that we've got ourselves into.
Well, I think just like the scientists have to get active and journalists are going to have to get active and our listeners are going to have to get active if we want to turn this around. And I wanted to say both you and I started trying to warn people about the state of the Earth back in the 1990s. Things have changed a lot since then, but I'm trying to fight off the feeling that the climate's already tipped, and I get discouraged when I read that Chinese coal use is just going to grow. It's unstoppable. A new story's out about that. Are we really doing something with environmental reporting, or have we kind of changed into chroniclers of the end times? What's your thinking on that?
Yeah, I have a similar ambivalent approach to that. Yeah, I think it's important for us to ring the warning bells and to document how we're pulling apart the web of life. At the same time, we need to also focus on solutions. What are the ways forward? What can be done to minimize the damage and to find new ways of living on the planet that are healthy and sustainable for all species? And I'm hoping to spend a lot more time on that in the next few years.
And I'd like to finish up with a double-barrel question about environmental journalism itself. First of all, can these stories continue to be heard through the deafening noise of the economic crisis? And second, how will you survive the death of newspapers, it looks like, and maybe even mass media generally? You want to take a shot at those two?
Yeah, the dominant story currently is the economics. And yet, of course, economics is just simply a subset of the environment. The economic crash that we're hearing so much about in the media is a temporary blip. But fortunately, the way out of the mess is also a way in which we can green our economies that will get us off the fossil fuels that got us into this mess in the first place. So the economic noise we're hearing is a problem, but only if we fail to use or fail to act to green our economies. If we just simply go back to doing the way things were, we're really in trouble then. So it's an opportunity for us to shift our societies off of fossil fuels so that we can produce more jobs, greener jobs.
Yeah, we can't go back to just opening up the malls for endless shopping and get the car dealerships all rolling again. We've definitely got to have a different vision, but will we hear about this with the problems that newspapers are having and the mass media layoffs?
I actually spoke to a bunch of journalism students last week in King's College in Halifax, and their question was, what future is there for us as journalists? And I told them that the traditional media are in trouble, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. There are other communications vehicles out there, the new media, online media, and there are new institutions NGOs, non-governmental organizations, have a huge role to play in helping us reshape our society and help us wean ourselves off of these fossil fuel and consumption-oriented growth patterns that we've had these last 100 years.
Well, I think you're right. It will happen, but we're still going to need people like yourself on the ground to interview scientists, to go to conferences, and we're going to have to find out the way to pay for that and keep people like you going. And that's an important thing that the NET community, if you will, and alternative thinking people are going to have to work out so that we don't end up in a vacuum where important news is just not passed on because nobody knows about it.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, you mentioned the Copenhagen conference. I doubt there's any Canadian journalists attending that or covering for any Canadian media. I've often been at important science meeting when I was the only journalist there, and the only reason I was there is because I paid for it out of my own pocket. So, yes, there's going to have to be a shift in the way in which society gets its information, but it's also going to have to start paying for it, but not and not necessarily through any subscriptions, because they're not delivering the kind of information that people really need. People, I think, are going to have to adopt a pay-the-journalist model, in other words, a donation kind of model, so that, to support the kind of work that I am doing and that you are doing and many others are doing, so that we can provide this service of letting society, our larger society, know this is what's really happening.
Adopt a journalist today. I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We've been talking with Stephen Leahy, last name spelled L-E-A-H-Y, one of the few environmental journalists covering the whole world. Steve, you have an email notification of your new stories. Can anybody sign up for that?
Oh, absolutely.
How do they do it?
Simply by sending an email message to writersteve, all one word, at gmail.com, and just put sub in the subject line.
All right, writersteve at gmail.com, and put sub in the subject line, and then you'll get tips of the new stories coming from Stephen Leahy. Well, thanks so much for your time and for your many years of hard work for Gaia. I really mean that.
Well, thanks, Alex. I appreciate your kind of work as well. It's probably the best environmental radio show on the planet.